Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. WCAI is excited to announce the launch of our first podcast. It's called The Forgetting, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. In a moment, we talk with the executive producer and co-host. But first, let's hear a short excerpt from the introduction to an episode of the podcast.
This is The Forgetting.
I was very melancholy about my first grandchild because I just feared that the first grandchild will really never know who I am in the real sense. I don't want anyone's freaking pity. I want their understanding of this disease. I want the fight in the heart so we can get more money, appropriations from the Congress to find a cure. And I want all of us to stand together. You know, Alzheimer's, now you got me going here. So I go back to the table where my wife and all these people are sitting, and I said to my wife, who was the woman standing behind me? The woman on the stage, she was very supportive, encouraging. Who was she? She said, Greg, there was no woman. And I said, yes, there was. There was one woman on the stage, and she was standing behind me. And she said, Greg, there was no woman. And I asked everyone in that around me, and they said, Greg, there was no one there.
From WCAI in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and Argo Studios on West 26th Street in New York City, this is The Forgetting, a podcast about dementia.
Joining us to discuss this new podcast is executive producer and former news director at WCAI, Sean Corcoran. And we should mention, while Sean is no longer at WCAI, he is the senior managing editor of news at our sister station, WGBH in Boston. So he hasn't gone far. Good
That's
to see
right.
you, Sean.
It's good to see you, Mindy. It's nice to be back. Yeah.
Also in studio with us is co-host of The Forgetting podcast, Greg O'Brien. He's the author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. So good to see you, Greg.
It's
Welcome back.
It's an honor to be here, Mindy. Thank you.
And joining us on the phone is David Schenck, author of The Forgetting, Alzheimer's Portrait of an Epidemic. He's the other host of the new podcast. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Mindy. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Sean, you did a lot of reporting on Alzheimer's when you were at WCAI. So where did this idea for the podcast come from?
Well, the idea came from Greg and David. I knew them because I had done so much reporting on Alzheimer's here at WCAI, a couple of series. And one of the groups that I worked with was the Cure Alzheimer's Fund. So when I was going around the country looking for Alzheimer's labs, doing cutting-edge work, they helped steer me towards certain researchers and give me a real lay of the land in terms of research. And so I got to know a little bit about Greg and David through that organization they both have a relationship with. And they came to me and they said, hey, we have this idea. We want to highlight, you know, our relationship as well as the fight that Greg is going through, and kind of track that over time, you know, do records together over time and see how the disease is manifesting itself in Greg and how Greg is handling it. Mm.
David, you and Greg have known each other for a number of years. So tell us about how you first met.
Well, how we first met. So I wrote a book years ago called The Forgetting about Alzheimer's, and have been involved in just trying to help spread awareness. And I'm really fundamentally just a journalist. I'm in the same business as Sean, just trying to get the word out there and educate people. And so I've done a number of different things to try to help people understand the disease. And I started making films, and I was able to raise some money and hired the great documentary filmmaker Steve James to make a short film about Alzheimer's. And we were working on it together. I was his producer, believe it or not. And we were working on, you know, what would be the perfect idea for a short documentary. And he wanted to find someone with the disease, kind of similar to what I had done with a different person in my book years before, with the disease, but who could still really articulate what that he or she was going through. And I told Steve, you know, those people are really, really hard to find. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are lots of people, thankfully, who have the disease who are speaking up, and you get lots of wonderful stories. But to get someone who's articulate enough, who really can convey, you know, the depth of what they're going through, I mean, it's just really difficult to find that person. And we actually searched for more than a year, and I told Steve it's not going to happen. And then I mentioned to someone who mentioned to someone, and lo and behold, we found out about Greg, and I met him, and we became fast friends, and we made this really stupendous short film about him, and he was writing his book at the time, And I can't get enough of Greg, both journalistically and just as a person. I just love spending time with him. And
you're scaring me, David.
Well, it's good that we're not in the same room. I'd be hugging and kissing you all over right now. But he's just he's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I didn't know him before he had the disease. But he's also just an incredible vehicle for, if you don't mind me talking about you in that way, Greg, for helping the world just understand this disease better. I knew we just had someone really, really special, and the podcast was just kind of another way to try to bring Greg's specialness to the world.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Greg's specialness in a second, but the podcast, so it's largely conversations between the two of you. And David, when you and Greg approached Sean about turning these conversations into a podcast on dementia and Alzheimer's, what were some of the issues or topics that you had with Greg that you wanted to share with an audience?
Well, I'll tell you, the fundamental idea for me was, it was a pretty intense one. And you know, I've been in this world for so long, I'm a little jaded. I've tried all these different things, and the one thing I'd never done was actually track a person either in audio or video over a long, long period of time. And I realized with Greg, we had this opportunity because of our relationship, because of how articulate he is, just because of his how amazing he is. And because he agreed to do this, that we could actually potentially have conversations until he can't talk about it anymore. Mm. We could actually potentially track, with the help of Greg's family, of course, the course of the disease, and show people in real time, over time, over years and years, how someone goes from A to B to C to D, all the way to Z. This is a very odd disease that's very, very slow, and really, it ends up being many different diseases over the course of time. And Greg and I talked about that concept. And of course, Greg is the most fearless person I've ever met. You throw a crazy idea at him that seems like, you know, will you jump off this cliff with me? And he's like, well, can we get to a higher cliff and jump off of that one? I mean, he loved the idea and is fearless about it. And then we talked to Sean about it, and Sean really responded to it, so we decided to try it.
Yeah. So, Greg, even before your diagnosis of early onset Alzheimer's, you knew this disease. You had family members with Alzheimer's. Tell us about caring for your mother, and if you think that better prepared you for dealing with your own diagnosis, or did it make it more difficult?
Well, that's a good question. It's a double-edged sword. I had a front row seat with a lot of family members. My maternal grandfather died of Alzheimer's, my mother, my paternal uncle, and before my father died, he also had prostate cancer and macular degeneration and circulation issues, which he passed down to me, thank you, Dad. And he also was diagnosed with dementia. So I was the family caregiver. I'm one of 10 kids, but we're raised in Rye, New York, outside Manhattan. And so I was the family caregiver on Cape Cod. And I watched the slow downward spiral. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it. And like I said, I don't want to take my family to that final place. And I think Sean knows this. Mm-hmm. And David, I'm not treating my cancer. And, you know, we're a long way from a cure. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff happening, but I don't want to do that.
This is heavy stuff, and you approach it with a lot of humor.
Well, it's the Irish in me. It's gallows humor. But I've always felt, as a writer, you know, both my parents were second-generation Irish, that if you can't laugh at an enemy, whether it's a disease or a death or a breakup of a relationship, if you can't find the humor at times, then that thing owns you. Mm. And this is slowly, and it's happening since we started this. It's owning me more and more. But, you know, until the boogeyman takes me out, I'm going to keep running.
Yeah. The Forgetting podcast is launching this week, and Sean, you've been recording conversations between David and Greg since 2015, so listeners will go back in time a bit. Sean, talk about where the podcast starts.
Where it starts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it starts in 2015. In the fall of 2015, we had our first record, and we recorded almost a dozen times since then. And this will be the launch of essentially the first season. So it goes over a few years, and you will be able to hear the differences in Greg and how he's dealing with the disease. And I suspect that we'll start doing more records. And I know Greg and David are both up for continuing this project. And really, we just want it to do some good. We want to put it out into the world, and people can find it, and maybe it can give them some comfort, some support, some understanding that they're not alone, whether they're a caregiver who has a family member or a loved one who's been diagnosed with dementia, to get, you know, to hear from Greg about how, and from his family. We actually interview his sons at one point, and we have hopes to interview other members of the family. Or if you've been diagnosed yourself and you're kind of where Greg is right now, it can be, I hope, helpful to hear Greg's experience and also how he approaches it.
Yeah.
You know, it was really resonated with me when Greg would say, you know, Greg was a newspaper man for a long, long time. He's still a writer. He still tries to write every day. But to hear how he used to really operate from his brain, everything from his intellect, and now he's really driven from his heart. And he says that, but then he tells stories about how that is true, and you can really see it. I think that that'll be a comfort and help for folks.
Well, one of the things that, and my mother is the hero of my life. I love my father, and, you know, in a large Irish family, it's you know, always about the dad. But when I saw how my mom, who taught me how to fight this, and she taught me how to write and speak from the heart when you can't from the brain. And you probably, I'm sure many times in life, or anyone listening, someone would say, tell me what's on your heart, speak from your heart. And when poets write, they write from the heart, they don't write from the head. And, you know, my brain used to be my best friend, but now I don't see any chance for reconciliation. And I think the heart is the place of the soul. Mm-hmm. And I think whatever, I'm not here to proselytize. If anyone wants to know, I'm Irish Catholic, but that's, you could look at the apostrophe and figure that out. But to write and speak from the soul.
Yeah. Greg, you've been very open about your experiences and your emotions on this journey. Some of your conversations with David are funny, some are heartbreaking. This makes for compelling listening, but what do you get out of knowing that these intimate conversations are being shared with a larger audience? Is that helpful and meaningful to you?
Yeah, when you have to deal with Alzheimer's, you lose meaning, and you lose a sense of self, and this has given me meaning back. And as a reporter trained, I mean, you know, I always tell people if I didn't write, I'd be a special needs kid. I don't know how to do anything else in life. And I just forgot what I was going to say.
No, you answered it. It's meaningful too. So we have an excerpt from the podcast. First, we hear David, and then Greg.
And do you try to fake your way through an instance where you don't recognize someone, or do you just say flat out, "I know that I know you, but I don't know who you are"?
Right now. And I never did this before, and in the disease, I'm more comfortable with it. I pretty much now, 80% of the time, unless I think, no, someone doesn't care, but 80% of the time, I say, look, I'm really sorry, but I don't recognize you, and I'm just dealing with some stuff, and I hope that's okay with you.
Yeah. Greg, people are often at a loss as to how to respond when they learn someone has Alzheimer's or any really terminal diagnosis. So what's your advice? I mean, I think that's, honestly, I don't remember who you are, but, you know, from people who are approaching you.
It's a four-letter word, L-O-V-E, and if you can share that and sense that, I think in Alzheimer's, people can sense that love, that touch. And one of the beautiful things about Cape Cod is
you have that, and mm-hmm. people care. And I'm not, as I said before, I don't want anyone's pity. I'm trying to, as a journalist, give people a window. So I think they see themselves, or a family member, or maybe them someday, and I'm trying to show them what my mother taught me, that mm-hmm. you can learn to live with this disease. And the great Bugs Bunny once said, don't take life too seriously because nobody gets out alive. So why don't you try to do some good on the way out? But what upsets me a lot about this is the stereotype of Alzheimer's, which just isn't true, of someone 80 years old in a nursing home and incontinent. And I'm incontinent, okay? You never see me wear, I'm not going to go into it deep, but you never see me wear light pants anymore. And so are millions of others like me who can still speak, who can write, and a lot of them are scared to talk because they're going to lose their jobs. And, you know, we never talked about cancer. We never talked about AIDS. And we need to bring Alzheimer's out of the closet. But Alzheimer's doesn't make you stupid. It doesn't rob your IQ. If you're smart, the doctors tell me I'm working off what they call a cognitive reserve, and people could Google that. I cut up a frog in high school, so that's all I know about it. But it's a blessing, and but people, they don't understand what this disease is. And I'll tell you an example. The other night, most of the time, 80% of people come over and they'll give me a hug, and they'll say, and I'll say, I'm sorry, I know you're important to me, but and they're, you know, hey, it's Sean, mm-hmm. Or it's Mindy, and I go, oh yeah, and but they're doing it because they know that could be them. But there was a woman, I'm not going to mention her name, the other night, I saw her in her place. I didn't know who she was. I had no clue, and she knew me, and she came over and gave me a hug, and I whispered in her ear, I'm really sorry I don't know your name. And she goes, yes, you do. Oh. You know my name. I go, no, I don't. Yes, you do. You know my name. Mm. And she said, my mother is 83 years old, and she doesn't know my name, but you know my name. And I said, well, your mother's 83. I'm 68. And my guess is your mother, for 20 years in having this disease, there were a lot of things she didn't tell you because she was scared.
Yeah.
And I just walked away. Yeah. I said, you're not getting it.
Yeah, David, these conversations that you have with Greg are pretty intense sometimes. And I'm wondering from your perspective, how you handle that emotion yourself.
Wow. There's so much that just got talked about that I'm just processing emotionally right now. I guess, you know, how do I handle it emotionally? I mean, I love Greg, and I love talking to Greg. It just gives me a good feeling to be talking with him. So I guess I'm used to hearing all the horror stories of Alzheimer's disease because I've heard them for, you know, two decades now, and have written about them and made films about them and talked about them, and the disease does not get any less depressing the more you know about it. It's not like that goes away, but you do get past the taboo, which is one of the big things we're trying to do. As Greg said, we're trying to get people kind of past the thing where they're so afraid of it they can't talk about it, and I'm well past that, and mm-hmm. so is Greg, obviously. And once you get past that, then you're just with a person who hopefully you love, mm-hmm. and you're spending time with that person, and you're laughing about stuff. And laughing doesn't mean that you're not taking life seriously. Laughing means you're taking it very seriously, and you're seeing the absurdity, and you're just kind of rolling with that. So I just try to be in the moment with Greg whenever I'm talking to him, whether it's on the phone or recording or whatever it is. And I just enjoy spending time with him. And I often actually forget that we're actually, you know, doing this thing that people are going to listen to. I just want people to hear our relationship and the truth that we're saying to one another. And, you know, I know Sean is going to take out the really boring stuff and keep the exciting stuff. So I let him worry about that. And somehow it really works. Yeah. And I should say one more thing, if you don't mind, Mindy.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I think we haven't yet conveyed you call us co-hosts. The reason that we're calling ourselves co-hosts is that we actually not only interview each other in this podcast, we interview other really interesting people mm-hmm. about the disease. So, for example, we had Dr. Rudy Tanzi on, who's one of the great researchers, mm-hmm. who actually, by the way, does the theme music for the podcast. And we've had all these really, really interesting people on. People are going to hear a really interesting conversation with Glenn Campbell's widow and lots and lots of people. And there's going to be more of that in the second season as well. Mm-hmm. So and Greg is a journalist through and through. And even though he stumbles now and again and is a little slower than he used to be, he's got great and true stories and questions that he can ask of people, and he can draw people out the way I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. So that part really works as well.
Yeah. Greg, you've created a number of strategies to get through your day. You've said scheduling interviews in the morning gives you a reason to get up. What are some of the other strategies that you use to cope?
Well, you'll never see me without my laptop, which is right here in front of you. And I journal 50, 60 times a day. When something happens, I'm afraid I'm going to forget, and I write it down. And that's how I wrote Pluto. When I got the diagnosis and when I started realizing, and I had two serious head injuries, which doctors said unmasked a disease in the making, it which complicates it. And I have the Alzheimer's gene APOE4 and had the brain scans and SPECT scans and all that stuff. And so I use my laptop as an instruction booklet and mm-hmm. write everything down. And, you know, I had 2,000 pages of notes before I wrote on Pluto. And I did it by, I also want to give credit to Lisa Genova, who's a very good friend of mine. She wrote Still Alice. Mm-hmm. She calls me Alice without the dress, but we're not going to go there today. And see, I got you laughing, huh?
Of course, you always do, Greg.
But see, that's a strategy, because if I get people laughing, they'll listen to what I'm saying as opposed to feel sorry for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't want them to feel sorry. But one of the things that is happening now is, the depression is taken over more and more, and it gets accelerated in this disease. And there were two times I tried to leave this world, because I know where this train is going. And then the rage is out of control. And it's scaring my wife and kids, and the short-term memory loss and the judgment and the filter. And it's taken me longer now to write. I wrote a column the other day on depression that took me 2 weeks to write, and 50% of it was recycled from a column I had written earlier. And there are times when, and I know this is not a big deal to people, but it is to me and any writer, when I can't find the keys on the keyboard at times. And it's almost, I've gotten to know the Campbell family, and Kim Campbell, who's Glenn's widow, is a good friend, and you know, I was mentioning in an email to her, I said, it's like Glenn not being able to find a chord on his guitar, and it's just the that blinking light that you see that's coming toward you. And what I try to do and talk about strategies when I can't think of something, a word or a concept, I play charades with Google. Mm-hmm. God bless Google. Mm-hmm. Sounds like, and mm-hmm. then all these things pop up, and then I look at it and I say, okay, this, and then all these, and then finally, if it's a concept and I'm writing, or a word, it could take me 15, 20 minutes now.
Yeah.
But I find it, you know, I just refuse to, you know, lying down and football and wrestling is a position of defeat. So I would encourage anyone to the extent that they can. And I'm not doing this alone. Again, I'm not proselytizing here, but through the grace of God, the universe, whatever you want to call it, in a disease where I feel I'm alone, and I do, I know that there's a hand of God the universe. I call it God, who's there. Yeah. And that God deserves the credit, not me.
I don't know if this is a question for Sean or David, but you know, we're talking about how honest Greg is about here, talking about the depression and the rage. And this is a thing a lot of families struggle with who have a loved one with Alzheimer's and maybe don't understand what that's about and what that's like. So as you were saying, you want to help people have this window. You're helping family here, members, when Greg is talking about some of the things he's going through, right? I mean, that's the whole idea.
I think so. Yeah. I think so, that people can see that they're not alone, that their loved one isn't the only one. Greg,
and maybe a better understanding of what's happening inside, you know, the mind of their loved one.
Well, that's why Greg and David are actually a very good combination. Greg has the experience and he has the stories and the perspective and the philosophy. David has a lot of that as well, but he also has, he knows the research. He knows medically what's going on and he can explain it as a journalist and writer. He knows how to explain things in understandable terms. And so even when we bring on Dr. Rudy Tanzi, probably the most well-known mm-hmm. Alzheimer's researcher in the world, David can talk to Rudy and really make it clear to the audience, you know, what's happening inside the brain.
All right, let's hear another excerpt from the Forgetting podcast, and this is Greg speaking.
3 weeks ago in Portland, Maine, I spoke to 500, maybe 600 people, Alzheimer's Association up there. Whole room was filled. It was the second year they asked me to come back. You know, I told them right out front, I said, look, I don't want your pity. I want you to see your story through me. And as I talked, they cried. But they weren't crying for me. They were crying for their family. They were crying because this could be their story.
Greg, you mentioned Mary Catherine, your wife, and your children. And as we're saying, Alzheimer's, like many diseases, just doesn't impact the person with the disease who's ill. It impacts the whole family. How is your family dealing with this disease? I know your sons are really helpful in helping you through a lot of this. And Mary Catherine,
my daughter,
and
too,
daughter,
Colleen,
yeah. And so how is this impacting them?
It's kind of with my mom and my dad, it's given them a front row seat. One of the things that, you know, scares me is, that, you know, might be 50% chance they could have it. Mm-hmm. And then I got a granddaughter now. But they've been very, very supportive and have given me strength and understand it. There are times when, with the tremendous rage, anyone in this disease, not just me, you can just go from 0 to 60 in seconds in an explosion, and that's scary. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I'm noticing more and more now is withdrawal. Even around my family, I can't process. And it was interesting, my wife, who sees this firsthand, my son the other night was trying to explain something to me, and he was getting frustrated, and finally she said, Dad can't process that. And that made me feel good that mm-hmm. I was upset because I couldn't process, but it made me feel good that she understood. And I'm not stupid. I just have a disease, so I don't feel stupid. And I don't want anyone else to feel stupid when they can't process. Right. But it's nice that people understand.
We were able to bring David, Greg, and Greg's two sons together for a recording up at the Boston Public Library. And I just assumed, because I see Greg in this situation where he's very open and honest, that was the situation at home. And they had a very open and honest conversation about a lot of different things with those microphones open. And I was surprised afterwards when Greg said, we haven't had a lot of those conversations as a family. And it was almost easier for him to kind of talk about it with the microphones in front of them. And I think a lot of families, I know a lot of families have trouble talking about the things that are right in front of them, that are really impacting them. And, you know, Greg may say the Irish have even more trouble than some others. But
well, also, too, isn't it, Greg, you're in a way trying to protect them, too?
Yeah. And so I don't know if they're listening, but they probably see 40% of it. And what is happening now is I can't hide it the way I could before. Mm-hmm. So the 40% is inching to 60. And I find that very troubling, yeah. very, very upsetting. It is what it is, as they say.
David, at some point during these recorded conversations, you asked Greg to stop using notes on his computer. Tell us why and how the conversations may have changed.
Yeah, and we go back and forth on this because, as Greg said, the computer is a godsend for him strategically. He can find words and he has some notes of things that have happened to him, and it will cue up stories. And I support that, of course, in going through his life. He needs it, and thank God it's there for him, and it would have been different a generation ago. But I really want people also, I want listeners to hear what's going on in Greg's mind. And so I've asked him sometimes to just put the computer away or just close it, so that they can hear his thought process and hear what he's not able to do. And because that's just as important. I mean, getting access to Greg's amazing stories and anecdotes and thoughts and just the right word choice, that's important. But it's also really important to hear, as we're having these conversations, and a month or two goes by and maybe there's a little bit of decline. I want people to hear that decline. And so does Greg. Mm-hmm. And so does Greg's family. This is just as much of a leap, for them. I mean, God bless them all. I love all of them. They're all terrific people. And they're doing something really, really brave here by letting their dad, talk just this honestly. And Greg is honest he makes a living out of being honest. But this podcast takes it to another level because we get in very, very deep, and there's no holds barred, and that's just really, that can be a very powerful thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
I call David Dad because he lectures me, so I do have my laptop closed, but David, they gave me a pad of paper, and I know it sucks, but I'm writing stuff down. But so that's the funny part. So I got everyone to laugh. So
again,
I'll say something serious. Decline. I see it. My family sees it. And I'm becoming more comfortable now showing people the decline. I still have to make a living to the extent I can. Our family's facing bankruptcy. So people who hire me know I can still write. And they still see it, but you can understand I don't want to wear the decline on my sleeve, but now I'm forced more and more to either show it or they could see it. So I'm getting more comfortable and with that.
Yeah.
And that's a hard process for someone in this disease to get comfortable showing the decline.
Yeah,
and for anyone listening, there are no two types of Alzheimer's that are the same. Someone might say, well, my father, my mother, but it doesn't. It's all different. We're all different. It affects people in different ways. And good example with cancer, why do some people die quickly and other people, it takes a long time for that to take it out? If I knew the answer, I could tell you how many angels dance on the head of a pin, mm-hmm. but I will tell you this, and Rudy Tanzi will tell you that Alzheimer's in general is a disease that can take 20 to 25 years. It's a quarter century to run its course. And the pathology can start in your 40s without symptoms. Mm-hmm. So when someone says, my husband got diagnosed and 5 years later he was dead, the reality of it is that probably for 20 years he had it and he was afraid to talk about it. And what I'm trying to do with On Pluto Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's is to get people to talk about it so they can come out of the closet mm-hmm. with support.
Yeah. Sean, you want the conversations in the podcast to be as real as possible. So can you explain what you mean by real and what your role is in shaping these conversations into the podcast?
It's not too difficult for me. I know Greg and David and I really work on kind of the production of it together. I'm usually in the room with Greg just to be there for support when David is usually in New York City where he's based and when we have these conversations. I am often the one who reminds them, oh, we've already told this story a few months ago. Maybe we could move on or talk about something else. But I really just want to put it out there. There was some discussion, well, maybe we need more sound design around this. That would be different music swells and things that would kind of match the emotion of the moment, or maybe we need more of this or that. And, you know, eventually we came down to just let them talk. Just let them be themselves. You know, certainly you take out some things because they can go on for an hour or so and you want it to be, a more reasonable length or something. But I just get out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear another clip from the podcast.
Humor is contrasted with, in this disease, loss of filter because the two are connected. Sometimes I can be funny and, you know, my daughter always says, Daddy, there's a thin line between caring and creepy, and you cross that line every day. So I'm just saying.
And is that, would you say that's gotten worse in over the last year or two?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many people who will now say, well, what Greg meant to say was. And
right.
It you become more potty mouth, and because the filter, you know how this works more than me, allows you to say what everyone else wants to say, but they can't because they're afraid to. So I've become a parody of my favorite comedian, the genius Larry David. I love that man. And I so love Larry David because he says what we all want to say. And in Alzheimer's, we kind of become Larry Davids.
All right, Sean, so how do you deal with Greg's loss of filter for the podcast?
Well, for a while we wrestled with one thing that Greg will say is that he curses more now than he ever did before. And for a while I grappled with that and would kind of bleep those out. But,
you
know,
again, taser. He would taser.
I really want this to be real life, so I've stopped bleeping unless he's really being creative in his cursing, in which case I might have to step in a little bit.
Yeah. So, David, how much of this podcast do we delve into explaining what's happening in the brain in Alzheimer's patients? You know, Greg will bring up something that's going on, and do you talk about it then? Obviously, you know a lot about the research, or do you go, okay, next episode we're going to bring in a researcher to talk about this? How do you deal with the research and what's actually happening in the brain?
Yeah, we do want people to understand, to use this as a vehicle for helping people understand all the different dimensions, not just the actual experience from through Greg, but also what is the disease all about, what explains all these different stages. And so we use our interviewees as kind of a vehicle for that. We also want people to understand that, as Greg so often conveys powerfully as an advocate, we're in a desperate race here to stop this disease, and we've made progress, and we need people to wake up. And I would curse now if this were just a podcast. I would try to emulate Greg and use some vulgar language to say, you know, wake up, because one thing I've learned over a couple of decades now of being in this world is that yes, scientists cure diseases, but actually it's the political will to solve a problem that underlies all that. And there's a lot of great scientists out there. I'm lucky enough to know a lot of them and talk to them about the progress, and like you get into the detail about where we are in stopping the disease, and we have made progress, but it's the American people, because America is where this stuff happens, frankly, you know, for the last century. It's the American people standing up and saying, this is going to stop now. We are going to spend enough money. We're going to put enough time and energy into it. We're going to make it a priority. And we have to do that. And we are getting better at it. We're spending three times the amount of money now than we were even a couple of years ago. It's still not enough. And we have to stop this disease before Greg's sons, Brendan and Connor, and his daughter also are facing it. And before it hits, you know, my kids. So, you know, it's personal for all of us, and it should be personal for all of us. I send a note out once a year to everyone on my mailing list and trying to raise money for research. And I've figured out how to boil it down to the most essential thing. Be selfish. Think about how this disease is going to affect you and your family, your kids, your grandkids, because it is. And we have to stop it. And Greg should be the last generation, you know, facing this disease. And that's not impossible. Mm. We are making progress, but we need more help from every single person listening to stand up and talk about it more and talk to their, you know, their representative in Congress and say, please, you know, spend more money on this disease. We got to stop it.
Do you want to say something, Greg?
Yeah. That's what David said with what he just said was smart. I was looking for the word. I couldn't find it. But that's a driving motivation for me, not only my kids and grandkids, but your kids and grandkids and anyone's listening, kids and grandkids, anyone with this disease. And I know hundreds and hundreds of them because we all have gotten to know each other, realize the train has left for us. There's no magic wand. That's, you know, no pill you're going to take that everything's going to be, you know. Spend your time and your limited resources on the kids and the grandkids. It is about the kids. And the other thing, too, is until we build that critical mass, because everyone is stuck in this damn stereotype, the stereotype is accurate about the end stage, not about the 25-year journey. And there's so many suffering people who are afraid to talk about this because of the taboo. Those are the people in the weeds in this disease. And until we understand that and people drop their damn stereotypes, we're not going to have a critical mass to politically solve this.
We have one more.
And it's a vicious cycle. I mean, that's the crazy thing, is that it's a hard disease to talk about. And because we don't talk about it enough, we don't have the political will to spend more money on it. And so that slows down the research. It's a very, very expensive disease to research. So we're trying to, in our own small way, we're trying to, you know, kind of reverse all of that, you know, all that negative, all those negative cycles and turn them the other way.
We have one more clip from the podcast. Let's take a listen.
You talked about you yourself having cancer and not treating that. And the implication there is that you'd rather die, if I can just be blunt about it, you'd rather die from the cancer sooner than to try to beat the cancer somehow and to die later from the advanced stages of Alzheimer's disease. Is that fair?
No, it's do I want a 10-year prison term or a life term?
Right.
I want a 10-year prison term. I was there, saw my grandfather, saw my mother, was there with my, I've been in the front row seeing the end stage, and damn it, I don't want to take my family there.
Yeah.
I don't want to take, we're heading into bankruptcy right now. I've gone through all my resources. My finances are an open book. I do have a $1.3 million life insurance policy. And so do you think I want to take my family into bankruptcy when, if something else can take me out, at least they have something to pay the bills?
Right.
As opposed to looking at me like when I'm motionless and can't talk? I'm not doing that.
Right.
Greg, all of us fear losing control. When you got your diagnosis of prostate cancer, did you feel at all like you regained some control over the Alzheimer's in a way?
Well, the diagnosis came 2 weeks apart.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And I figured I had a way out. So, yeah. The decline. There are a couple times recently when and again, I hope my kids aren't listening, where I prayed at night, Lord, let me not wake up. This is in the last couple weeks. And what I've heard, again, God, the universe, whoever, but whatever your perspective, is I heard back, it ain't your time yet. Mm. So I want a God like Bill Belichick, do your job. and that motivates me.
Yeah. Sean, talk a little bit about, for people who aren't familiar with Getting Podcasts, explain how they can get The Forgetting.
Oh, there are so many ways to get this podcast. First, number one, I mean, you can go to the website, our website, capeandislands.org. You'll find a link there. You can just go to Google and punch in The Forgetting Podcast, and it should come up. You may already get, if you do get podcasts, you can go to the same places you already do, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. So it's going to be everywhere. You can also look on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, The Forgetting Podcast.
And how often will they come out?
We're launching four in the beginning, and then they'll come out every other week for this first season. Mm-hmm. Probably have about maybe 10 of them.
Yeah, and if people want to share their comments or stories or connect after hearing the podcast, what will be the options? Facebook?
I would think Facebook would probably be the best place to go. You know, we will have a Twitter handle as well, but it's a little harder for conversations. But I think Facebook, and we'll try to answer any questions or provide any insight that we can.
And I guess a question for David and Greg, and you've sort of touched on this, but David, what are you hoping people will take away from the podcast and hearing Greg's story?
Well, first of all, I want Greg to stick around for season two. So Greg, when you're having that dream, please throw my voice in there. You can't, we're not ready to let you go yet.
Okay.
I want people to talk about it with their own family, to use this as a little jumping off point and bust through that taboo. It feels, it's so oppressive when you're on the one side of the taboo. And then when you start talking about it and you're on the other side, it's like, wow, why did I not talk about that before? There's just so much richness and life affirming stuff that happens when you start facing decline in all of its honesty. And I think that's going to be, I know that's going to be helpful to lives, to caregivers' lives, to families' lives everywhere. I just know it because I've seen it happen so many times. But I also, you know, we also have this massive global agenda with all these scientists who need funding and to get this disease over and done with. And that's a real goal, and it's a real possibility. And we're in the thick of it, and Greg and I are warriors trying to get that done.
Yeah.
So,
Greg, final word from you.
Yeah, you asked, what are you hoping to get out of this? And it's one word, hope. And hope in terms of learning to live with Alzheimer's. The dying part comes later.
We'll put a link to the Forgetting Facebook page as well as more information about the Forgetting podcast and how to subscribe at our website, capeandislands.org. Sean Corcoran, executive producer of The Forgetting, David Schenck, author of The Forgetting, Alzheimer's Portrait of an Epidemic, and Greg O'Brien, author of On Pluto, Inside the Mind of Alzheimer's. Thank you so much. And Greg, especially thank you for sharing your story. Man, this is not the first time you've been here, but thank you so much. I feel like you're doing such great work. And it's, as David said, you're very brave, and we really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for what you guys do, and because you're the vehicle. So thank you.
And Sean and David, thanks.
Thanks, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Mindy.